Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 everyone. Hope everyone is doing well today. Look, I know this thing probably says an hour, but it's supposed to say 30 minutes on here. But, you know, we're going to end the show in 30 minutes. So we're going to do that. But I just want to hope everybody is having a good week. And I hope everybody is doing well today, because today is a brand new day. So, you know, we just want to make sure that everybody is doing good. Okay, so yeah, 30 minutes. 30 minutes it is. I don't like to belabor these episodes or do nothing that's long. You know, an hour can be kind of long, you know, for certain things, especially something like this. This is just me talking. So, 4 years of education is the title. So, let's think about this for a second. Let's rewind the clock back to about 4 years ago on this time, of how we felt the dynamic shift of our country and our mental state just go into, you know, division and get deep into our emotions of how that time was and how it is now. You know, you come in 4 years, you see the inauguration that's about to happen, passing from Obama to Trump, and now it's from Trump to Biden. And the nation is in a different place at this moment. Now, I don't like to talk a lot about politics, but what I want to focus on is the dynamics of, you know, the emotional toll that it took on the country for the past 4 years. Even just ourselves, we've been through a lot of stuff. We've been through hell as a nation. You know, we still had this pandemic going on where it's closing businesses, it's closing schools, closing, like, you know, our everyday normal life. You know, but if you think about it, you know, what is our normal life like? You know, we took a lot of stuff for granted. We took going to the store for granted, going to the movies for granted, going out to eat for granted, speaking with people, just meeting with people for granted, just out in the open. We took a lot of that stuff for granted. But here we are right now. You know, what can you say? It seems like it's in a worse state more than ever. But let's stay focused on this portion of the topic of what has this taught us. I know for me, and I can see for me, it taught me not to take things for granted anymore because of what can happen just this fast. When you sit back and think about when you have time to, you know, really soul search, as they say, it's like mind-boggling of how things can shift so dynamically in life. In one moment you blink, everything's fine. Next moment, you know, people dying and everything. So it's a mess. It really is. And so I wanted to talk about it. So if I ever touched on this before, so a few months ago, actually, it was in October, I lost a dear friend, more like a brother. I don't know if I showed this in the last episode, but, you know, I'm saying it now. But it was crazy because, I mean, he was so close to me. And, you know, he didn't die of COVID. He didn't die of anything of violence. It was just a car accident. I mean, something as simple as him going, you know, up the street, you know, and come back, he lost his life. And now here we are, you know, without him because of, you know, what has happened. And what I'm trying to say is, you know, take time out to take inventory on your life, because you never know when it's your last. You really don't. We like to think that we can live forever, you know, live through things and and, you know, overcome a lot of things, but there's certain things you just may not overcome. There's just certain things that you just may not get through. And what I'm trying to say is that I know this is a slow going thing because I'm trying to actually really talk through this and just think this out, but it's just so thought provoking when you think about, you know, your life from where you are, where you came to. So in the past 4 years, where have you gone? Where have you come from and where you're going and where you're at right now? It's all kind of jumbled together. And you try to make sense of these things. Like, but you know, the truth is, I mean, you could just take one day at a time. You try to make sense of things, but you can only take one day at a time. There's no way to ever tell your future or what you can and can't do or whatever it is. I mean, just years ago, everybody was traveling, everybody was doing good, but look at it now. It's nothing. So it's time to take an inventory of our life. So, and I say this with a person in the Bible in mind. One of the old school Bible characters is Joseph. If you don't know about Joseph was, so this is the story of Joseph. Paraphrasing. So Joseph was a young man, child, boy, whatever you want to call him at the time. He was the youngest. He was one of the youngest of his brothers. Out of 12 brothers, he was probably number 11. And they also had a sister too, but he was probably number 11 out of the brothers. And they had a younger name named Benjamin. But Joseph was favored among his father because he was born to him from the woman that he loved, which is Rachel, the first child of it, the wife that he loved. He didn't love the other women like he loved Joseph, so he showed her favoritism. And one of the indications of that favoritism was that he got a coat of many colors that his father gave to him, never gave anything to his brothers, at least it's not documented in the Bible about that, gave it to his brothers. And Joseph, you know, he's the younger brother. You know, sometimes maybe younger brothers can be pesky, a little too optimistic, and, you know, just don't care about people's feelings or what they say. So, you know, Joseph would have these dreams, and these dreams would, you know, depict his family bowing down to him or just showing, you know, him kingly ethics, and his family didn't like that, especially his brothers. Even at one point, they caught his father off guard of how his dreams were. And so, you know, if you put this in modern times, you would say Joseph was like the golden child. So he played sports, he did well, well fed, well athletic, good looking kid. Everything was going for him, everything was going in the right direction for him. But his brothers had other plans for him. So his brothers were out tending to the field, and one of them got to their minds to say, you know, let's kill him. Others would say, let's throw him in a ditch, you know. And then eventually, you know, they came to a conclusion to kind of sabotage his life. So I believe what they did was they eventually sold him off to slavery. And they told his father that he died. They ripped the coat off of him when he came. So let me put this back. Let me bring it back a little bit. So Joseph came out to his brothers to see him, to get them food while they were tending to the sheep and the herds. And while they were doing that, that's when they finally decided to, you know, get rid of him. So it went from kill all the way down to lesson to sell him off to slavery with some merchants. And that's what they did. But they didn't tell that to their father. What they did was they ripped off his coat, put some blood on it, made it seem like he was tore up by a wild animal and killed. And so his father thought he was dead. You know, the family thought he was dead, but the brothers knew what really happened. So long, the story goes, Joseph is in Egypt, sold in slavery, but eventually, you know, Joseph had a good upbringing. He had a good head on his shoulders. So, you know, he did his job well. He became in good master positions, but it would, once again, it was sabotaged. Potiphar's wife wanted him, and he knew it was wrong, and he didn't give in to any of her temptation. She wanted him sexually. And so, you know, she lied on him pretty much. She lied on him. Then he got put in jail. Once again, another setback in Joseph's life. He was put in jail after, you know, after all those years that he, you know, kind of built himself up. You got to understand the emotional toll that he went through. You know, look, I'm finally getting my life together after being separated from my brothers, after they betrayed me, sold me into slavery. And now I'm here. I'm doing well. I'm making things. I might even be able to go back home one day. I might be able to win the trust and go back home. And here comes this woman up here to sell him out, lie on him, and put him in prison. So he's in prison. Once again, he's doing good in prison. He's well-mannered, well-behaved. Things going well in prison for him. And then, you know, he has the prisoners, the baker and the cup holder, have these dreams. And they end up telling his dreams, and Joseph interpreted for them. And so he interpreted for them. You know, those dreams came to pass. One of them to passing away, and the cupbearer ended up, you know, being promoted, being out of jail. So, but, you know, one of the things was when Joseph told him, when you get out of jail, you know, put in a good word for me, loan on him. But he forgot. That guy forgot. So Joseph stayed in there a little bit longer, and eventually he did get out. So through all that time, Joseph got out, but he didn't run back home. He stayed there. He stayed there to the point where he was second in command of Egypt. And I left out a part on there. I left out a part on purpose for there because of how he got out. He got out again because, you know, Potiphar had a dream about a famine. And that famine was 7 years, you know, 7 years of harvest, 7 years of famine, and no one could interpret it. The only person that could interpret it was Joseph, and the person that told him was the cupbearer, the person that, you know, remembered him from his prison days. So he went and got him, Joseph, interpreting. He was right, and thus that led him to the commanding position to be second in command eventually. And this brings everything full circle. So there's a famine in the land, barren everywhere, you know, after Joseph's dedication to keeping the numbers right and keeping the stores correct. Egypt was flawless with the stores. Egypt was good. Egypt was giving people money, things like that, and giving them grains and just keep feeding the people, keeping them alive. So this famine also affected his family. So his family came, not the entire family, but his brothers, the 10 brothers came. And his brothers came, and then they, as for, they didn't recognize it was Joseph. But he recognized them. So he'll grill them. He'll put them through the ringer every time they came. Who knows? I mean, it could have been out of spite. Some of it could have been, you know, some of it. But it was more of a test to see who they are, see if they really loved them. And so, you know, he eventually put them through tests. He eventually saw his younger brother those times, and eventually he revealed himself to them. And even through that time period, so eventually he found out that his father was alive and told him to bring him. So eventually he brought his father and his entire family, which ranked about 100-something people, to Egypt so they could live and thrive. Thus, that led to, you know, further down the line of how the Israelites were put into slavery. But let's focus on this part. So he went through all that stuff, everything, all that stuff. Yeah, his dream still came true. So we often like to say, you know, it's not always of how you start, but it's how you finish your life. And that story is a great depiction of not how you start, but how you finish. Joseph's life started off great, right? I mean, he was born into his wealthy family. Jacob was a wealthy guy. I mean, he had 12 sons. He had calves back then. Calves were a big deal. Crops, everything, whole nine wives, about four wives, I believe. That was a big deal. I mean, Jacob was a, you know, pretty well-to-do type of guy. You know, he was born in the world. He didn't know or understand harm, but his brothers were jealous. There's always some sinfulness. And so the race continues. The journey continues. And it got rocky in the middle, as life does. Life gets rocky most of the time in the middle at times. You know, it's not because you don't have purpose. It's not because you don't have anointing. It's not because of any of that. But what it is because it just must. You like to see that part when it becomes rocky. Sometimes we like to blame God for all the things that happen in our life and we turn our back on God, but that should not be the point. That should not happen, because when that happens, when you turn your back on God, you miss your blessings because you're focusing on the problem and not the solution. God is the solution. What's in front of you is the problem, but God is bigger. Promise. God is constantly telling you, focus on me, focus on me, focus on me, focus on me, focus on me. But you can't, because you see this problem. If Joseph focused on the fact that his brother sold him to slavery, you know, he would never got over that. He would have never got his blessing. He would have focused on the fact that, you know, this woman betrayed me. Now I'm in jail. And he would have stayed bitter. He would have never made it. And if he would have said, forget Pharaoh, I mean, forget Potiphar, forget all that. Dream, I don't care. Even though I know what it is, I'm not telling you it. You could have doomed everybody. You never know what your life holds. You never know what your value is or what your contribution is. Joseph, I mean, he was just a guy. He was just a guy that went through circumstances. And at the time of each roadblock, he withstood the test. See, and that's the thing with life, and that's the thing with me. We looking for a big deal, a big solution, a big deal. Those things don't come how we see it. It's like a curveball. See, what happens is that curveball happens every single day. And so every single day, you need to withstand the test, the temptation. You need to withstand things. You need to be upright and forthright with people. You need to do these things. You need to be bold. And that's Joseph did every single day. Joseph, to him, he didn't do anything out of the ordinary. But when you look at him and say, man, this was an extraordinary guy. To him, he was just being himself. He was doing what he's supposed to. He was following God. He just did what he's supposed to do. And he wasn't looking for it. You never see in his text or any Bible or anything that he said, man, I'm just waiting for my big break. I'm waiting for this. For this. You don't see any of that. What you see is a consistency. Every time Joseph withstood the test, he was blessed. And that's what we have to do. So how does this relate to now? How does this relate to now? So for 4 years, maybe even longer, more likely even longer than that, we've been inside of this famine. And what has been going on, we're not going to the resource in this famine. So this famine is metaphor for a spiritual dwarfness, if you want to say that. Or growth. We became a people, a backlash, backstabbing, cynical, narcissistic, greedy. It's just unbelievable of what we have become as a people. We have really turned our back on God, and we don't even know that we did. I don't even think that we noticed it. That's really the scary part, because we think this is just the norm. This is how people supposed to do. You ever notice how sometimes when people ask you to do something nice for you and they don't want anything in return, it just seems so out of the ordinary? That's because that stuff doesn't happen anymore. It really doesn't. You're looking for somebody to take something out of return and like, man, this doesn't even, like, thank you for holding the door for me. My goodness, it shouldn't be that big of a deal, should it? Or thank you for, you know, listening to what I had to say. It shouldn't be that big a deal. Our consistent behavior is sinful. And that's what we expect. We expect people to be, you know, bad. And when somebody's consistently good and just being genuine, that's unprecedented. And so what we have taken on these past ways, we have accepted the fact that we have, you know, we are who we are. And at this point, it's almost like, you know, you can't tell me what to do. We let our problems trump the solution. And the solution is Christ. We cannot continue to allow that in our lives. And I'm just speaking just about one of the timer people, you know, as a nation, you know, that's a whole nother story. But I'm just saying, as individuals, we cannot let problems, financial problems, marriage problems, divorce problems, problems, temptation problems, we can't let these problems dictate the solution. And the solution is Christ. We have to go back to him. That's the only way to survive out here. You know, some people don't believe in the higher power. Some people don't believe God. They don't believe anything like that. Well, you know what? I don't even feel sorry for them. Can I say that? I don't. Because the truth of the matter is, everybody's pulling at something to try to get some fulfillment, trying to fill that void in their life. Everybody's trying to get at something. And you are sitting up here not believing anything. Look, we can talk, we can chill, we can be friends and everything, but ultimately, you know, the decision is yours. I can't force you to do anything. Nobody can force you to do anything. And, you know, when the decision is yours, so be it. It comes a point in a person's life where they had to take ownership of what they think, of what they do, and what they say. You know, regardless of how many times people come at you, words or something like that, you got to take ownership of that type of stuff. So through this time, I think we're kind of starved of a lot of things. But the main thing is the solution. We keep running in circles about, you know, how can we solve, you know, racism? How can we solve, you know, the financial problems? How can we solve education problems? How can we solve race relations, world relations, financial relations? How can we solve crisis after crisis? How can we do these things? We're just running around like chickens with our heads cut off. This is not going to work. This is not going to work. And that's even in our personal lives. How can we resolve our marital issues? Can I resolve, you know, maybe not liking my spouse, not liking my kids, or just feeling inadequate? How can I resolve these things? These are all issues that we think about. I mean, just put, name an issue, just put it in there. But at the end of the day, Jesus can. See, we think Jesus is far from us. We think he's very far away, but he's not. He's not. He's right here in it with us. He's had a turn to him. He's bigger than these problems that we have. And we just need to recognize it. See, that's where that anxiety comes from. That's where that overwhelmingness comes from, because you don't have a source to pull from. You're trying to do this on your own. You're not meant to live life on your own. You know, you can't find a spouse. You're like, oh, man, oh, there's a spouse that's not going to do it. Kids are not going to do it. If anything, all these things just add to it. Money's not going to do it. I mean, and Diddy said more, and Biggie said more money, more problems. Look, the source is not here. The source is something bigger than money. It's bigger than relationships. It's bigger than sets. It's bigger than all that. And the reality is, it is Christ. But at the end of the day, you hope, you really hope that you made the right decision, because you don't want to make anything bad. You really don't. You don't want to mess up your life or anyone else's life. And you don't want to live your life shoulda, coulda, woulda. And right now we're living in that moment. it's so much doubt that goes up in the air that creates this surge of uncertainty and just eventually explodes. This untrust, unfaithful. And that's what we saw last week. And that's what we see in our lives every day. If we don't go to the source. The source is simple. You just had to go to it. So I wonder where you go to it. Well, I go to it. Because you know when I speak about these things, I speak to myself too. Mainly for me. So we had to make sure that we understand that, you know, God is here and he's in the midst. We can't act like, you know, he's not here with us. We can't do that anymore. Because him being here makes us understand, you know, we're not in this alone. Like, he has our back. That's all I got to say about that. I don't really have anything else to say. Because at the end of the day, the decision is yours. So hopefully you learn something from this. Just take time out and to do your thing. And listen, God, nobody else. Just bring it on in. Because he got you. He sure enough does got you. I hope you understand the dynamics of that. Because God sure enough he got you. He ain't skipping on. He ain't slipping on you. You just got to go to him. All right. So I hope everybody's good. But this is the end of the show. So look, if you want to say something, email, whatever, you know, you can do that. If you just want to listen, just go ahead and listen. It's slow, very slow. That's just how my candor is. It's very slow. So, you know, that's what it is. But at the end of the day, you know, you got to make your own decisions. And with that, you know, you got to make sure that you know who you're following, what you're following, and make sure it's right. Just because you think it's right doesn't mean it's right to do or right to say like that. All right, everyone. So this is it. So I want everyone to have a good day, good week. I mean, we have a big time coming up this week with everyone, you know, the inauguration and everything that's happening. So, yeah, make sure everybody's good and safe and sound. Everyone, you have a good rest of the day. Because I am about to go to, you know, maybe watch some movies or something like that. So y'all have a good rest of the day. Chill out with your loved ones. It's Sunday evening. So have a good time. And I wish you the best. I pray for you. And until next week, we're going to get this thing going and continue. I might have some more stuff for you. We don't know. But I wanted to make sure that I got this across. All right, everyone. Until next week, peace. Be good.